We all sound great.
The audience.
Talk shit.
Recorded live.
Live. Dang it. That noise means someone just hung up.
I think we lost Dave.
I'm going to kill somebody. I'm not kidding. Someone is going to die. Welcome to Webcomics Weekly. We're having a hard time keeping all of our participants on the show tonight.
We're going to try again.
Embarrassing. Hi.
You do that on purpose because you don't like the idea of a live show. I know it. You're trying to sabotage this.
No, I accidentally hung up on myself. I'm a moron.
Oh, okay. Well, then let's start over.
All right. Just play the music again.
Cue the music.
Hey-o!
Webcomics Weekly.
It's time for an experimental episode of Webcomics Weekly, the show where four phenomenal webcomic artists try to impart what knowledge we have onto you, the up-and-comers, or up-and-comers all the way to pros. We learn as much from each other as we do from ourselves.
That sounds about right, Scott.
Magic's inside all of us.
That sounds wonderful.
With us tonight, across from me, with his beautiful brown eyes, Christopher Stargazer Straub, starslip.com.
Could be.
Dialed in via Skype through the magic of technology, all the way in California, it's glistening Dave Kellett.
Hey-o. Pancakes.
Wow.
SheldonComics.com.
Hailing all the way. It's always sunny in Philadelphia. It's Brad Wigwam Geiger.
Wigwam?
I don't think there's a man, a woman, or a child alive in America today who doesn't enjoy and crave a tasty buttery snack.
Nice.
I'm going to stick with that. I think it works.
And across the desk from me, across the pond, as it were, Scott Hammerin' Harry Kurtz. Don't know why I give him that name. PvPonline.com.
Can't prove I did it. Dave, you don't know how we got to calling him. Brad's new name is Peepee Pants. We went from Brad Geiger.
Is it an iteration of an iteration of an iteration?
Yes. It went from Brad Geiger to Bad Guiga to Brad Wigwam to TP to PP to PP Pants.
Nice.
There you go.
I like Wigwam. I think that's good. Brad Wigwam.
Brad Wigwam.
Hello. My name is Brad Wigwam.
Hey, this is interesting.
Tell me.
They're saying that I sound like I'm off mic. Is it your laptop that's the input for them right now? Or are or are we going through the mixer?
We're going through the mixer. The mixer's coming into the laptop.
You sound terrible to me, Chris.
Yeah?
Yeah, you sound like you're speaking through nine socks.
Then I'm going into the laptop mic. I'm not going. The mixer is not the input. But the second you turn on the USB, they're going to get feedback.
Oh, well, then we need to move this closer to you. That's how the echo canceling is working, so they can hear you.
All right.
Don't worry, guys. When you download this later, it's going to sound fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
So, all right. This is how we solved the echo problem, Dave. It's a little... So how does Chris sound now?
How do I sound now?
Moderately. I guess better, quote unquote.
We like you anyway?
You're trying? Question mark?
It's this or the echo. Which would you prefer?
This. I would much prefer this.
Okay.
I want the echo.
So tonight we're doing a little bit experimental. Experimental? Now I'm that teenage girl that asks everything like it's a question or states everything like it's a question. So tonight at 31 Flavors, we're trying something experimental. We're doing this kind of semi-live. We're not sure we're going to take calls, but you are in the chat. And so any of you that have Webcomics Weekly questions, you can post them in the chat. I know that, Chris, you're watching on, right?
I sure am.
I'm also going to log in as another name and watch. But for Brad and Dave and the rest of us, let's just pretend like this is a normal Webcomics Weekly.
Fantastic.
We're just taking advantage of the fact that TalkShoe pays more if there's live participants, right? Am I right? Who's right? Me. So anyway, did you, Dave got a chance to listen to our previous show this morning that we did with Danielle?
Cool. Yeah, nice work. I'm sorry I couldn't have been there. It was a good topic.
Well, don't let the fact that that happened this morning stop you from talking about it. Give us, Dave, we want your convention tips.
My convention tips are to stand next to Brad any convention you get a chance. that man can sell ice cream to Eskimos.
And besides, anybody looks good standing next to me, right?
That's right. My sales go up just because I'm standing next to Brad. Women are like, dear God, oh, anything that looks like better than, oh, I don't know where that insult was going.
Hey, Dave, not to bring you off track, although that's certainly a benefit. There's one thing we didn't talk about that falls right into your wheelhouse, and that is flyers. I'd love to hear you talk about flyers.
I like the way you said flyers the first time, and that is flyers. So flyers, convention appearances. So what I've been doing over the last couple of years, and some people hate it and some people love it, and I love it. My working theory is that people, when they go to a convention, want not only to see the creators that they know and love, but want to find new stuff. I mean, when I go to a comics convention, I want to find something good. And sometimes that's a very passive approach, and I walk around quietly and look at tables and peer and stuff. But the truth of it is, at your average comics convention, you're bombarded with 10,000 things to look at. And so what does your eye focus on? It? You almost have trouble focusing on it on an event. So what I do is give a takeaway that people can grab or read at the convention or take home with them, and that's a flyer. And it's, in years past, it was very simple, sort of one-color photocopy-esque type flyer that just showed Sheldon. And then in recent years, I've gotten a little fancier with four-color, double-sided, 80-pound press flyers that feel like quality and that sort of stuff. And I find it really effective not only to bring in readers after the convention, but to increase sales at the con. So,
how do I turn off the?
Oh, what is that? Is that me?
No,
it's in the TalkShoe client.
Sorry,
it's on the bottom.
I'm done.
All right, you got it.
Thank you.
That's that what I sound like? Oh God!
I'm going to use the flyers.
Brad, I believe that. Do you forget that the flyers?
What you'll find here is that if you go to my website, children can be sick.
So that was the basic spiel for me about flyers. Is that I find them to be a great introduction in terms of like getting people to stop and look, because let's be honest, there's a plethora of things at comic conventions to look at, and you need to sort of catch people's eyes and saying hi, how are you doing? A makes you more personable and likable and nice person to make eye contact with, and the trick obviously there is to not be creepy and to not be too pushy, but to be fun. And Brad and I have talked about this in the past at comic convention, which is that if you're putting out an air of fun and of niceness and of laughter and humor, you're doing it. You want to be putting out an air of laughter and niceness and, hey, the world is fun kind of air. You don't want to be putting out the shy, traditionally dorky, I've never kissed a woman kind of comic strip person, because that's not what you're selling, you know. So that's the spiel for me about flyers. And I find it to be very effective. It worked very well for me at San Diego, so.
Chris was trying to tell me on our way to Baltimore that you have this whole series of pitches with that flyer, and I wanted you to go over that. I want you to go through it. What was it, Chris? First, he gives you the flyer, and he says what?
I don't know. Maybe I should let Dave say it, lest it appear that I'm making fun of him.
Trust me, I will not think you're making fun of me. The bottom line here for that you got to remember is that it's going to be a little bit embarrassing to have to sell yourself. But that, as is true with most things in life, you have to believe in yourself before you ask other people to believe in you. You know, so there's going to be embarrassment, and there's going to be people that look at you and go psh, and there's going to be people that read through it completely and then go psh. But there's going to be 30% of people that go, hey, wow, this is really great. Thank you for handing this to me.
We were using them this weekend, and we were getting a great response to them. You know, so even me, I'm benefiting from using the flyers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good move.
Good.
But I was doing I was doing a poor impression of what I heard was Dave's magical spiel, which was, "Hey, would you like a flyer or something to read when you're standing in line or you're bored?" And then and then they're, if they look at it and they chuckle, you go, "Do you like that one?" "Yeah, that one is in book number two right here. Be happy to put a sketch in it for you if you'd like to buy it."
Right.
Very good. That's pretty good. That's not a bad impersonation of me.
But, well, minus your charm. Because I'm that's how I'm recounting it. How it probably came out was, "Flyer! Flyer, make laugh picture look, please. Book, my book.
Please to be book. Talking to me with the nice lady. How?"
Well, the other thing is not to let those flyers sit on your table. Get a bunch of them in your hand. Stand up. Get on your hind legs. And as people go walking past, trust them in straight out. When you hand something to someone, 9 people out of 10 are going to, out of reflex, grab it. Now they've got it in their hands. You're halfway home now. I mean, it doesn't matter if they look at it now, later, when they get home, or maybe even never. But you've got it in their hands. That's the most important part.
Right. And, you know, I think, too, a big help there when you're passing out flyers is so often in life we're used to, like, the teenage kid that's been hired by a company to pass out flyers at the street corner, or the guy in Vegas going, you know, that guy, passing out flyers. And so you, like, look at them and you just see the word corporation on them, so you ignore them. But if you say the word, "Hey, can I give you a sample of my work?" Or,
right.
would you mind having a look at my work? People are much more forgiving and not forgiving, that's not the word. But they sort of let
more
their
open.
Walls down.
More
yeah,
open.
Yeah, they're more open. They let their walls drop a bit, and they're more willing to stop, pause, come talk to you.
You said walls drop. Okay.
One of the people chatting suggests that you get out from behind a table and make it more personable. I don't know that I like that idea.
No. Didn't we talk about this? There is something to having that safety net of a table between the visitor and the proprietor.
Yeah.
If you're jumping right up in their space, then they're going to go, "Oh, okay, you're threatening me. Goodbye."
Yeah. Oh, physical space. You know, because then you immediately feel like you're about to get the car salesman hand over the shoulder and like, "Come on, let me show you a little bit around Stadtlib crisis." And you're like, back away. So the table is sort of a nice little agreed upon, I can't get too close to you, and you can't get too close to me. So let's,
I know what you need, a blue troll. Let me get you into a blue troll today.
What's it going to take?
For me to get you into a blue troll?
What's it going to take to get you into a pop culture comic strip today?
Okay, I'm going to have to talk to my manager about that.
Free flyer? Is it a free flyer? Would you like a free flyer? Book? Would you like a book? It's a book. Little plush. Fuzzy plush. Fuzzy plush for your monitor.
Put it on your monitor.
Kids going to like it. Kids going to smile.
This strip was only read by a grandmother on Sunday mornings.
Well, you know, the other nice thing about the table is that if you're like most people, you've got a number of things on your table. So if you're talking with the table in between you, and the person you're talking to, you can direct them towards the left or towards the right. If you're standing out in front of your table, now you've got to reach behind you and grab for things. It's set up that way for a reason. It's really quite efficient.
And let's be honest here, is that I, even as a lover of comics in the whole comics world, there's a potential creepiness factor on both sides of those tables when you go to a comics convention. So it's nice to have that table there, you know?
Yeah.
Here's a question from Tim Fisher in our chat room. He wants to know if we ever do contests or giveaways at shows. That may not be a bad idea.
I think it is a good idea.
I think that probably do we know anybody that did a contest? Did Umbrella do one?
No. I don't know who did one.
The most I've seen is that usually people bring to a show an exclusive item, and in order to get the item, you have to stop by 6 or 7 different booths and get a stamp, and then you bring it back to that one booth. And then you get the item. And the idea is that you will stop by all these different booths and possibly buy stuff. But what ends up happening is if you're not the booth with the item, you end up with a ton of people coming by going, "Stamp."
Right.
Stamp.
Right.
Yeah.
Erica had the idea of a raffle, and I really like the idea. But
I would imagine if you're at a multi-day con, though, you would need to have the prize that day, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's not a big deal for you to get to pull together before the show.
The only problem is that I fear there are issues where if someone has to make a purchase in order to participate, it's considered a lottery and you're in big trouble.
Well, yeah, that's why you have to be able to give it to them.
Because Chris and I were talking about this. You know, Apple just made these new iPod Nanos. So they have a little iPod now that plays video for $150. That's not a large investment. So what you do is you get an iPod Nano, bring it home, slap on the whole season of PvP of the series, do a little sketch on the back of it, and you've got yourself quite a little prize for a con. It only costs you $150.
Right.
But, you know, what's the criteria of giving that away at a show?
Well, and even more importantly, help me out here. What is the upside for the artist in doing all that? I mean, what are you getting out of it?
Well, I guess the idea is you're getting people to come to your table. If people are buying a ticket or buying an item to put their name in, they're buying items.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I need someone who's a lawyer to or in the know. I need some state fair empresario to call and let me know what the rules are. I mean, raffles. My parents have gone to raffles where you spend $1 on a ticket and you win a prize. It can't be illegal.
Well, I think if you remember those, Scott, it's probably mostly been nonprofits that you bought the raffle from, you know, like
yeah.
either a church group or
yeah,
a,
you're
or
probably
a
right.
Rotary club. But, you know, I think Brad might be onto something, though, because what is the advantage in terms of foot traffic to your booth?
You're not that far removed from the stamp, stamp, stamp mentality. I mean, I would much rather, if it was me and I was had to do this, I would almost attempt to do something like you need to prove your manliness. To participate, you know, you've either got to show that you've read, or you've got to show that you know a little bit, or something like that, or even to encourage somebody to go and buy the book and read through it a little bit, and then come back and fill out the form. You know what I mean? I'm grappling, and I'm just thinking out loud. I'm just grappling with how it benefits the artist, and I'm still not completely sold.
Well, I'm not sure at a smaller show it might. I think at a bigger show, I think the idea is that you're going to get people. Who are coming to your table to participate in the event, the raffle, and then they buy something when they're there. But again,
now here's an idea that might work, Scott, is that everybody that buys something gets a free prize, quote unquote, and the free prize is on one of those spinner wheels, and there are varying values. You know,
that's pretty cool.
Now that you could have like one out of 30 squares be a piece of really good original art, and everything else is either a button or a sticker or you know something of smaller value. That might be worthwhile to try.
You're gonna be spinning the wheel. Spinning the wheel quite a bit, unless you put a minimum purchase value on that, though.
That's true.
I just want a book. All right, here you go. Spin the wheel. I really don't want to. Now spin the wheel.
And you're going to annoy. We were talking a little bit about table etiquette. We're going to really annoy the people on either side of you who've got to listen to that over and over again.
Yeah.
I've been in those shoes.
Will you make a silent one then?
I want one that every time you spin it, it plays a song, you know.
Hey, Chris, when we went to Price is Right, did we actually spin that wheel or did we just touch it? No one ever actually got to spin it, did we?
No, I thought we spun it, but I don't remember that it spun very well.
Were we scared to spin it? Yeah, I think we were. Because it looked like it was put together in 1918 by like World War One veterans, you know.
Yeah, it didn't look safe.
Anyway, I got a question for all of us. This is from David Simon of CrimsonDark.com. He says, "So far, the focus of the discussion is heavily skewed towards black and white, 3 or 4 panel newspaper style comic strips. This is entirely understandable considering the work you guys produce, but it would be nice to hear more discussion pertinent to other formats such as full color, full page graphic novels." One issue which bugs me is trying to get the pacing right when you're only updating twice a week but want to keep the story moving ahead without skipping important details. Any tips for the abnormally gradual form of episodic storytelling? And I think this raises an interesting point is why a broader question before we get into his specific, which is why do dailies and why do shorter format and why in 3-4 panel strips work better than long form strips? And I have my theories, but I'd want to hear from you guys first.
Well, I don't know that they do work better, but I think they certainly work better on the web.
I think it's just harder to do it with a long strip that only updates twice a week. I don't know where you.
I think most people, if you're going to read a serial like that and you can't get up a page a day,
yeah,
then what you end up doing is you have people that come back on a sporadic basis or would rather just come and read it all in one sitting.
We can, but we can all agree that. even if, let's say that, Scott, you were doing PvP 7 days a week.
Right.
But you didn't put them up until Sunday. And Sunday you put seven of them up.
Right.
That's, you're going to do worse than if you put them up once a day.
Well, and that's something that a person can do. I mean, if you're doing a long-form story where you're breaking it up in pages, just because eventually it's going to be a page that maybe you're going to print, go ahead and break it up maybe and put it a couple panels on per day. See, the problem with it being a long form is that gag strips have a stopping point at the end of every day. You know, you've got to break it up into punchlines. So,
well, I think too, though, this is one of those cases where, and I think all four of us are, because I know you guys, we're all lovers of long form comics. But I think this is one of those cases where the medium doesn't match the form. It's kind of like, you know, why Arthur Conan Doyle wrote Sherlock Holmes for newspapers in installments. Well, why is that not done anymore? And the basic answer is nobody reads newspapers with that long form intent anymore. And I think for the most part, no one goes online intending to sit at Slate and read a 40-page article for most of the morning. You know, no one wants to read a New Yorker-length article. And for the most part, I think visually, no one wants to read, or not, no, I don't want to be cruel about it, but I think less people than you would hope want to read long-form comics online.
I unfortunately think that's the case. I really do.
And I say that as a lover of long-form comics. I think the bottom line is long-form comics just don't work on the medium of the web as well as short-form do.
I think it's also a question of meeting a reader satisfaction. And just to kind of build on what you guys are saying, part of the reason that gag comics work on the web is that you get that daily satisfaction. And if you are going to put a long-form comic on the web, I think you've got to – I think every update has got to be prepared with the thought in mind that there's got to be some kind of satisfaction at the end of reading every one of those updates. In other words, have the luxury building to something that's going to be continued to, then you're going to get to something interesting. Every one of those pages that you update has to work as a standalone in and of itself, just like our cartoons do. I know you guys all I probably think about this, but when I put up a comic on a Tuesday, it's fully in my mind that somebody's going to be coming to my site, and this is going to be their very first introduction to Evil Incorporated. So I've got to make it accessible to them, and I've got to make it able to stand on its own feet.
Yeah.
And I think somebody that's doing this long-form thing, I think that page they're posting on a Wednesday has to be able to stand on its own feet and satisfy the reader, and then you can get them to come back later on in the week.
That's probably a really good point, Brad.
Someone in the chat posted that it's the shortness of the American attention span, and I don't think that's true because I can sit down and read three or four comics and at home on the couch and be hungry for more. It's not an attention span thing. It really has to do with what is comfortable being read on the net. And I'm going to do something probably that no one would expect me to do. But if this is why Zuda chose it, that 4-3 ratio is really smart. Because you're forcing it to be a small snippet, and it's very strip-like. And it's enough space to where someone could put...
that's probably screen ratio.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's TV screen ratio anyway.
Yeah, and I think it really has to do with I will sit down and read a novel. I'll sit down and read chapters on my couch, but I don't want to read chapters scrolling on a computer screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's
right.
Very strange. Well, I wonder what the psychology behind it is.
Do you remember that Sony, we were talking about that, had developed that little book reader where you can load a book into it digitally? But the screen is supposed to mimic the page of a book.
We saw that on the plane.
It has the same brightness as a book
page. They were selling
that
in the SkyMall book, and I said, I can't believe they're still trying to sell this.
Well, I don't know how well it can do. I don't think it's going to take off. I think it's still easier to carry a book with you.
Yeah, and I think the bottom line is until the flicker rate is so good that your eye would never notice the strain, eventually 30 pages, 40 pages, 100 pages in, you're going to be like, ah, the heck with this. I'm going back to a book.
You know what? I think that's what it is, Dave. A comic strip, you read it, you're done, you do something else, and then you could even look away for a second and come back and read the next one.
You know what? That might be it. Yeah, you might be right.
You get really kind of what I call head-tired, sleepy-head. Reading a bunch of stuff on the net, and it's because of the eye strain from the monitor. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Well, you get that slight neck crane forward and the slight, you know, lower spine crane forward, and you're right. You just sort of get the whole positioning of your body and your eyes just doesn't work in long periods. Anyway, so that's, I think that probably answers that question as well as three short form guys can answer it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you were saying that someone had asked a question to you, Chris, in a similar
way. I don't know if it was the same guy, but somebody else said, how do you feel about, you guys are, that's fine for humor strips, but what about for drama? And I don't really know. I think it's what Brad said, that each strip has to be satisfying. If it's just a tent pole, if it's exposition.
I don't think you or me or Dave or Brad would have any trouble writing a strip that was dramatic. In fact, I think writing drama is easier.
Yeah. Well, way easier.
I actually think you're right.
You can walk into a room of people and you can walk in and walk up to the podium and say, I'm sorry I'm late on my way over here. I got a call. My wife was in a car accident. She's at the hospital, and I don't know if she's going to make it. And you can be guaranteed, unless they're soulless jerks, that everyone in that room is affected. But if you got to go in and make them all laugh, that's tough. You know,
right.
Drama's easy. And you can construct a drama strip just like a humor strip where you're ending it in a punchline, but the punchline is a dramatic punch.
Yeah.
And that's so easy. Maybe we should do that.
And in fact, I think that's why when a comic strip delves into or touches on true drama or true emotional impact, like your inbox just fills up because people don't expect that gut shot. And I think it gets them in a way much more than they even expect from a drama strip. You know?
Yeah, that was what we were talking about, is that in what respect can you – we don't know how to write drama strips, well, necessarily, but we know how to put drama into a humor strip and have that affect everybody.
I think that really – I think when you have a humor strip – and you see it put in drama, and it's effective and not cheesy. I think you know those guys are the ones that got the stuff.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, Chris, you are a master at it. You are a master at it. That whole stuff with Jovia dying, and there was a strip you did where Vanderbeam told A to Z, the computer, to start plotting a course to a time frame where Jovia was still alive and asked him how long it would take. And what was the answer? The answer was...
He said it was, no, the first time it was 400,000 years.
Right. But then he's recalculated.
And now it's only, it's only like 53 years. So Vanderbeam will be like 97 or 110.
But the first time you did it, it was 400,000 years. And his response was, begin.
Yeah.
And that was awesome. And when you do that type of stuff, I think fans respond to it incredibly well.
I think that it's cool to do it, but provided that, because once I did that, I could have gone another four strips with sadness, and I thought it was important that the next strip after that to be kind of funny, and then the one after that funny again.
Otherwise, you're Funky Winkerbean. Then you're just doing it because now it's like you're wanting to get in the paper so that they can say, Starslip Crisis is tackling homophobia this week.
And forever.
And the title of the column, the column is... When the funny papers aren't so funny,
I'm Storm Phillips, Dateline NBC.
Northern Ireland problem.
The thing about comedy and drama is that it really can work hand in hand. And if you write strong comedy, it can really strengthen your drama, and it can work vice versa too. I mean, combining the two can really be a powerful thing.
Yeah. I still get people to come up and tell me, couples especially, that the storyline about Jade's pregnancy scare, where Brent had the dream he was talking to his daughter, is their favorite storyline of all time.
Yeah, that was a good
one. Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, and my favorite one from that one was the push on the swing.
When she's on the swing.
Yeah.
And when she goes off frame.
And now it's Jade.
And she comes back and it's Jade.
And not the daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was very proud of that.
That's great.
And the daughter's like, you're just afraid. He's like, I'm not afraid of commitment. I'm not afraid of any of that. I've never been one of those guys. And she says, you're not afraid of that. You're afraid of losing me. And then it comes back as Jade. That was pretty cool. I'm proud of that strip because of the writing. I was really proud of the way I drew Jade on the swing.
So you drew it, and then you're like, oh, wait, I need some words up there.
No, but people
it's late. I'll throw something up.
People emailed me and was like, this strip was great. And I'm like, yeah, I'm real proud of it. But I'm not proud because it affected them or it was good writing. It's because I really nailed Jade swinging in the wind, hitting her hair. And
We are great.
So next question. Next question. Let's get it off the off the four.
Oh man, I didn't come off that way, did I?
No.
I was just saying that.
No,
I was.
No, I'm just saying.
Okay.
All four of us in a matter of 10 minutes were like, I tell you what's great, me. That's good.
Well, no, but you got to take pride in your work. And when
no, Scott, I'm kidding.
90% of the time when I draw something, it's not what I have in my head. And when
exactly,
man, when you talk about that, guys, how
that's
great.
That's actually a really good point, is the 1 in 100 chance when what you draw, what comes out of your pen, is absolutely picture perfect what you have in your mind.
Oh, that is such a great feeling.
I think it's important to know how a good cartoonist would know how to cheat so that it looks like what you drew was what was in your head. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because then they're like, how did you nail it so perfectly? You're like, well, I didn't. I couldn't. I had to do it this way.
Yeah. Right.
That's why people ask me if there's ever days where I don't want to draw. And I'm like, oh, yeah, all the time. And they're like, what gets you through those days? How do you keep drawing? And I'm like, most of the time I'm chasing that dream of recapturing in my head that one time I got it right. But
we've all had a storyline where we don't know where to go with it next. And then you've come up with something that's like, that's funny for throwaway. And then that takes you in a whole new direction. And that's what wakes it up.
Yeah.
And then it's exciting to draw.
Let's change the subject because that's getting dangerously close to my tip.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's
a tip. I don't have one. I got to think. All right, keep going.
Let me throw this in, and this is about something we haven't talked about yet that I think we could devote an entire episode to, and that is writer's block. And my cure for writer's block has always been what Chris just got done saying. When you come to a fork in the road, take it. You know, there's nothing that's too out there. Take that throwaway gag and follow it for a week, you know, and see where it goes. I've done that and got the most wonderful stuff out of it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's the stuff that I'm sitting there as I'm writing it out for the first draft saying, this isn't good enough. It's crap. It'll never work. And then all of a sudden I go back and look at it and punch it up a little bit. And I realize I've got something really nice, you know, and it got me out of a real, real tight writer's block.
Too close, Scott.
I'm just going to go ahead and say it now.
You're making faces like everybody blew it.
What my tip was going to be, and we're talking about it now, so there's no need in saving it, is one of my favorite things to do is to write myself into a corner and then force myself to write out of it. In other words, I have a basic idea of a storyline I want to do. For example, the one I'm working on now where Francis and Marcy go to the anime con. I have no idea how this is ending at all. I wrote up until them getting there, and now I'm going day by day. Sometimes that does not work out so great, but man, every once in a while, it's just fun to write yourself out of a hole that you've dug yourself in.
And isn't it kind of exhilarating to people like, wow, I love where you're going with this, and you're like, I guess so am I.
Well, you know what's good about that, Scott, is that when you put yourself in that situation, you force yourself to take a risk. And risk-taking writing is the best writing to read.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one, I don't know if you guys saw it. One of the best examples I've ever had in terms of proving it to myself and just writers without a writer's block is the guys over at Unshelved challenged me to do a week's worth of strips on something totally innocuous and boring. So we ended up doing plastic coffee cup lids.
Yeah.
And, plastic coffee cup lids?
Yeah.
Yeah, we literally challenged each other to see how would be serious on, like, the dumbest possible thing you could pick. And so they picked coffee cup lids. And out of that week, I was like, by Wednesday, I was like, oh, God, no jokes coming, chilling, like, oh. And I ended up doing this whole weird thing, these propaganda-ish beat the commies thing about coffee cup lids. And it was the funniest, weirdest thing I've ever
done.
What's that?
Oh, sorry.
Hold on a sec. We're
you were breaking up a little bit.
Yeah, let me kill some things.
No, that's all right.
Anyway,
but yeah.
The bottom line for me was that like if you're in such writer's block that you can't think of anything, literally look around the house, grab an object. I bet you within 20-30 minutes you can have a joke about that topic. You know.
Yeah.
Front doors, doorbells, carpet, couches. We've all done a joke about one of those things at one point in our life, and you can do another one if you have to. Writer's block is just a panic in your brain that you have to work through.
Right.
I think what I do is I look at I don't think there are any new scenarios necessarily. Everybody's doing the same Like the neat character doesn't like the dirty character and that kind of thing. But right. I
Oscar,
try to think of
Oscar.
First time I saw it said F U, I thought I didn't what? Never mind, I forgot the line. Anyway, but the point is
the F U.
Yeah.
Line.
It said Felix Unger.
It said Oscar, I'm stepping
It said
out.
We are all out of cornflakes.
F U. F U. It took me 3 weeks to figure out F U meant Felix Unger.
That's right.
Felix, you're the only man I know who has clenched hair.
Nobody gets those.
Point, Chris.
I'm saying you have those scenarios, but then what joke hasn't been done yet, or what's the least obvious joke?
I find myself in that trap now.
Like what if the dirty guy for now, what if the clean guy somehow could like the dirty guy for some particular thing that actually makes him cleaner than. Clean,
this is the this is a trap I found myself in recently. I had to snap myself out of it and go, now you're being ridiculous.
What was it?
What I've been doing lately is I'll set up a storyline that's very sitcom-y cliche. For example, let's say Brent's going to take care of a baby.
Right.
Jade gives Brent Sam's baby to take care of. Typical thing would be that Brent has a hard time with the baby. That would be the typical outcome of that sitcom-ish situation. So I'm like, well, I can't do that. Everyone's expecting that. So I'm going to have Brent do great with the baby, and Jade's going to be upset because he does better with the baby than she does. No one will expect that. And that's been what's in my head. That's been my method of doing stuff for the last year. I'll take a situation, the first one that pops to me in my head, I'll try to reverse it. Now I'm like, okay. Jade gives Brent a baby to take care of. Can't have him have a hard time with the baby. I'll have him do great with the baby. Jade gets upset about it. No, wait. They'll expect that, too. Now I'll have the baby do better than both of them. And,
Yeah.
Now it's cliche to do the opposite of what's typical in my head. And I've just got to...
Or you find yourself in a situation where you take that situation and you go way out in left field with it. You know, Brent takes the baby and the baby is possessed by Satan or something. You know, and then you're getting so you're making a completely different mistake. You're getting wacky just for the sake of being wacky, you know?
Yeah. But that's another good tip.
That reminds me of all the email that somebody wrote me back and they got upset because I said, don't write those wacky emails to creators. And try and impress them with how wacky you can sound.
Yeah, did you get a bunch of those?
And then I got a couple that were like, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to. And I'm like, I wasn't talking about you.
Hey, Chris.
Hey.
Slipping up the slip slap, but the star slip is the slippityest.
God, no. Anyway.
But I really like doing that. You start off with a situation that's very typical, and then you just turn on its ear a little bit.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that's how to stand out.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're all good at it.
We're so great.
All good.
All of us. We're the best.
All right. Next question.
No.
Here's the next one. I've been running my webcomic for 2 months now, but there are times when I find it very hard to sit down and actually draw it like I'm supposed to, resulting in needless delays. What is the secret to keeping a good schedule, and how can I make it work on a daily basis?
Sweet. I'm absolved from this question. You guys tackle it.
Why?
I never meet my schedule. My strips go up all times of the day. I don't know the answer to this one. You tell me. I'm excited to hear the answer to this.
All right.
I'll tackle this one. Yeah, you go ahead, Dave.
I think that there's a gray area in terms of updates that everyone's willing to forgive. Like, if there's a new one up every day, I don't think people are going to be like, oh, you said it was 9 a.m. and it's 9:30, or you said 9 a.m. and it's... I mean, yes, there are people that are anal retentive, but for the most part, the average reader will be like, great, he's putting up a free one every day. But I think the bigger problem is when someone consistently, day in and day out, finds it uncomfortable or unenjoyable or passionless to draw or to create their strip. Because I think that this business, this art form, is such a long, slow slog that if you don't have genuine passion for it, if you didn't do it or if you wouldn't do it, even if no money would ever come in, then it's not for you, I think is the bottom line.
Yeah.
I think you have to want to do this so bad that you will do it for the next 40 years, 365 days a year, or, you know, however many days a year. And I think a lot of people make that mistake. Like, if you're the type of personality that says, hey, I'm 25 and I'm good at guitar and I'm good at comics and I'm good at engineering and I'm good at movie making and I'm going to do all of them. The unfortunate answer, I think, in life is that you will probably not only not be good at all of them, you won't succeed at any of them, at least in the case of comics. Comics requires such a passion day in and day out, or at least week in and week out. I don't know.
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think I see that a lot with web comics. Is people are like, hey, I got three in the bag, and I'm giving up, you know.
Right.
Well, you have to pace yourself.
What was I going to say about it? I thought I had something good to say. Oh, I know. I had an idea for a second strip to do a second strip, and I can't get excited about it. And then in Baltimore, we were sitting. Remember, we were in the airport, and we were talking about a strip about zombies?
Yeah.
And I got a lot more excited to do that one. I want to do that one first. It doesn't matter that I think that the other strip idea is more lucrative. I think that one will go a lot.
Which other one?
The recording studio one.
Oh, no, do the zombie one.
That's what I'm saying, is that I'm going to have to work up to feeling that one. But the one I feel now is the zombie one. I would like to work on that next.
But that's very broad. That's what you want. It's as broad as the recording studio one.
Yeah.
Seriously, and zombies are hot right now.
But the bottom line, though, is your passion is with the zombies.
And your idea, which was actually my idea, but your idea is is new. It's not been done yet.
Yeah.
Can you want to talk about it? Because I'm really excited about it, too.
You know what? I talked about it on another Power Hour, so I can talk about it again. But I talked about the previous iteration of it.
Oh.
Don't talk about it.
Oh, wait. That's right.
Why?
That was another one of Dave's tips.
You know what? I was going to say this as my tip, but I will do it now if you want. Is that actually wasn't going to be my tip for today, but
just give it.
That the more you talk about a project that you've never started, the more you will never start it. The more you will never get any ground on it because. And I got this from a screenwriter friend of mine who's written like six very successful scripts now. Is that he will never talk about a project until he's done because the problem is your mind wants to share it, and if you physically share it with conversation. You won't share it by writing it, and you won't share it by drawing it. You'll just share it by talking about it.
Hey, guys, I'm going to attain true happiness. True happiness next week.
Yeah, exactly. But it's a shortcut to getting it out in the world, and if you do that, you cheat yourself of actually doing the project.
Wow, that's true. That is why you do it. And then you kind of get it out, and then you don't want to make it because you've already gone through the excitement of sharing it.
The good thing about the recording studio strip is that I also don't have any ideas for it yet. So that will help me in the long run.
Do the other one.
But now it's going to be ruined.
Why?
Because, for the very same reason. Nah, I already talked about it. It doesn't matter.
No, it's not magic. He didn't voodoo curse you.
Dave does this all the time.
He's not a gypsy woman going, you've spoken of your strip now. It's doomed to fail you. Also, full moon, werewolf.
Also, you're getting thinner.
And then I pull off my glasses, wisp of smoke. Ha, gypsy woman.
You take your glasses off and the glasses disappear and you go, ha, and you go, ah, damn it. Where's my glasses?
Gypsy woman, that's a sound effect. A gypsy woman.
The smoke spells it out.
Well, hey, does anyone that hasn't blown their tips yet today have any tips? Before we wrap it up, we're coming up on almost 45 minutes now.
I don't have a tip, unfortunately.
I actually
liked how we did it earlier yesterday, or no, this morning, where we just wove the tips in as we thought of them, rather than the end climax of, oh, I guess write with pencils. Oh, I don't know. Use ink for good.
Hold on, I want to write that one down.
Use a pencil. Use a pencil. Brad, what's yours?
Well, just in case anybody actually was listening to the end, I've got one that occurred to me while I was working on this past week's worth of strips. And that is when you're drawing people talking in your typical setting, every now and again, consider tilting some of the characters' heads like to one side or the other. In other words, like so their one ear is closer to their shoulder and the other ear is up, that kind of a tilt. Because we get so wrapped up into straight on, you know, 90-degree angles, the eyes are straight at the eyes, and there's such a wide range of emotion that can be brought through with just a head tilt that we never do. And I think part of that is because it's a little bit tougher to draw. You've got to take into account that jawline that juts out now. and the curve of the neck, but challenge yourself to do that, and you're going to see a lot wider range of emotion in your characters. I know I did this week.
I know I did this week.
You guys just left me hanging there.
No, that was great. I think we should all go silent to let Brad do those little suffixes at the end of his talk. And that's my tip for the week. And I know it worked for me.
You're gonna thank yourself for it. I know I did this week.
Or at the end of Brad's talk, it just goes, doon, 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 doon.
Here's a tip.
All right, new rule. We all have to go silent after Brad gives a tip so that he'll do his self-congratulatory follow-up. That's awesome.
Hi, I'm Brad Wigwa. Here's a tip. Playing music while you're drawing isn't always the best thing to do. A little silence helps those ideas come out. I know it worked for me. Boom, bing, ding, ding.
No, and then Brad goes, I know it worked for me. And the camera lingers on him, and then his shirt buttons pop off. Boing, boing.
That's so random.
Why would his shirt buttons pop?
Because of pride.
Oh.
Oh, toupee completely pops off.
Gosh.
Hi, I'm Brad Wigwam, and I'm here to tell you. Sorry, I'm loving the name modification.
Brad will never get through another podcast without his name being modified again.
Well, I was saying to Brad before he went to Baltimore, you poor SOB, because now whenever you go to a Comic-Con, there's going to be people that will be like, oh, are you Brad Wigwar?
Brad Gwiga.
Wigwa.
Brad Wigwar.
Chris said at the con that he pictured Brad is the kind of guy that if he gets angry, he's kind of scary to be around. Like, if you gave him a Glock and put him behind a desk and he was just, like, examining the pistol and he's like, here's what you're going to do. You're going to leave my office. You're going to do what I told you to do, and then you're going to come back and tell me that you've done it.
No, he says, here, you're going to take this gun.
That's right. You're going to take this gun.
You're going to leave.
Yeah. You're going to go do what I told you to do, and then you're either going to come back and tell me it's done, or you're going to kill yourself while you're out there. And then the guy goes, huh, can I just kill myself now? I don't want to go through this. No. No, you can't.
The other one was, what if I turn the gun on you right now?
You're not going to do that.
You're right. I'm not going to do it.
I'm not. I'm just going to kill myself right now. No.
No.
No, you're not.
You're going to do what I said.
You're going to do what I said. You're going to go through this. Okay, Mr. Guiga.
That's Geiger.
You guys are killing me.
Now, if you excuse me, I'm going to leave the room by jumping and aiming both guns at you.
Thanks, Mr.
Guiga. No problem. Tuck roll.
Tuck roll into a Ferrari.
Hi, I'm Brad Wigwa. And when I'm shooting both guns, I like to hold them real tight. I know what works for me.
Sometimes the cop will tell you to drop your weapon. Pull your clip out. Don't forget, you might have dropped your clip, but you still got one in the chamber. It's always come to help me.
Hello, I'm Brad Wigwa. They talk to you about changing your oil every 3,000 miles. I know my car appreciates it, and so do I.
I know my car appreciates it. Hi, I'm Brad Wigwa. You know, it's getting to be winter again, but don't forget, there could be another warm snap. So your yard could be full of fleas, ticks, and heartworms. Make sure your dog gets his heartworm medicine. I know my dog appreciates it. Right spot.
Silhouette of them playing in the park.
God, this is not helping anybody with webcomics. I guess this last part is our tip. Our tip of the day is be as funny as us. And then put it in a comic.
Just run it into the ground. Run any bit you have into the ground. There's sure to be four or five good ones in there. I know it's worked for me.
Brad is dying. God, Brad, you should be our target audience.
I know at this point I've woken up both of my kids. My wife is going to be ready to kill me by the time I get out of this studio.
The next time, hi, I'm Brad Guiga. The next time you do a podcast, make sure both your kids are awake. Your wife will appreciate it. I know mine does.
Brad walks into his kid's room, who he just woke up, and he goes, "Hi, I'm Brad Guiga. I just woke you up with my laughter. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did."
Hi, I anticipated you'd want a glass of water. Here it is. Small sip, son. Don't make your stomach hurt. You'll appreciate it. I know I will.
I know I'll appreciate your stomach not hurting.
And there's no camera in there, and he's flipping his kid out, but he looks out towards a non-existent camera and says, "And don't forget, plastic sheets means he won't wet the bed." Boom, bing, ding, ding.
Don't forget to spay and neuter your pets. I wish I had done it before I had this guy.
Who are you talking to, Daddy? Shut up. Smile.
Take your water and go to bed.
Smile at the camera. What camera?
Oh, man.
Man, what a crazy week it's been.
We learned a lot about conventions.
We learned a lot about dramatic strips.
We learned about how often to update.
And we learned that the best thing to do is make sure that your dog is current on all of its worm and heart medications. Heartworm medication.
Thanks for listening. I'm Brad Wigwam.
Do-do-do. Whenever you're signing off from a podcast, be sure to give your full name. Everybody appreciates knowing who you are. I know I do.
Hey, I'll use the music as a little thing. Go ahead.
All right.
Hey, I'm Brad Wigwam. Hey, I'm Brad Pee-Pee Pants Wigwam. Remember, kids, to let people know your podcast is over, prepare some outro music. Let them know it's time to go.
Nothing.
I'm Brad Guiga.
No, he should just stand there stoically listening to it. Like this.
No, Chris.
All right, do it again.
It needs to go like this. Everyone give me the pause.
All right.
Don't. Hi, I'm Brad Pee-Pee Pants Guigua Guigwam. If you're running a podcast, let your patrons know it's time to log off with some outro music. They'll appreciate it. I said log off, you sons of bitches.
In the meantime, celebrate comes up.
Celebrate, you still here?
Come on. Hello, I'm Brad Wigwam. I know when I'm ready to celebrate good times.
Yeah,
I like to listen to a little Cool in the Gang. They enjoyed playing it. I enjoyed listening to it.
Greatest hits available Amazon.com.
Hello, I'm Brad Wigwam. I do like to say Wigwam.
Is it wrong that I'm picturing Brad and the hypothetical Brad and all of these? He's wearing an Oxford shirt that's bloodstained and he's got a holster.
Hi. By the end of our podcast, we're not even trying to get it close to Brad's name. Hi, I'm Hablam Dimna Hama Me. I'm Papa Poopy Poops. I'm Brad Guiga. Let people know your podcast is over by playing urban music. It scares them off.
For some reason, I have this image of Brad with like a full plate of spaghetti and he's kind of staring off camera. And then he looks towards the camera and he puts down the plate of spaghetti. Hi, I'm Brad Wigwam.
Like he was not doing what he's supposed to be doing.
Yeah, like he wasn't ready for the camera shot. He's got this full plate of spaghetti and meatballs. Oh, hey, I'm Brad Wigwam.
And then he's like, see you later, and just takes a huge overstuffed fork full of spaghetti that no one could possibly swallow and just shoves it in his mouth and stands there with it in his mouth, the big mouthful of spaghetti.
I tell you what, I'm Brad Wigwam. I know when I'm eating spaghetti, I like to call it pischetti because it's funnier to say. I think even the pischetti enjoys it.
Pischetti.
I know I do.
I picked it up from Family Circus.
Also, I like calling the meatballs meat bulbs. Jeez.
Hey, who's still in the chat?
I think we need to end our...
No, God, we got to end it.
now in hour three of the Wigwam Marathon. We've raised $28,000 so far for the Wigwam plan.
All right.
All right, gentlemen.
These little wigs need more wams. All right, guys.
Very good.
All right.
Thanks for being a part of the podcast. I'm really going to play the outro music.
Do the real outro.
For reals.
And do our intros, our outro intro in our neutro.
This has been...
Just go for it.
Hold on. This is in the middle of it. I don't want to do that.
Doesn't matter.
Thanks for listening to Webcomics Weekly. Dave Kellett, SheldonComics.com. Brad Geiger, Evil-Comic.com. Chris Straub at Starslip.com. And I'm Scott Kurtz. You can find me at PvPOnline.com. Remember, kids, always end your podcast with songs and a recap of who's on your panel. They'll appreciate it. You'll appreciate it. Your listeners will appreciate it.
And your dog is going to love it.
Spaghetti. Gypsy women.
This is the podcast that doesn't end.
All right, guys.
All right, losers. Thank you.
Thank you. I got to go put my kids to bed.
All right.
Again.
I'm going to go put this up live, our recorded version.
Oh, awesome.
Thank you.
All right, man.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.